How did you figure the hypnotism thing? She asked.
Like everything else, Reacher said. I thought I knew who and why, but the how part looked absolutely impossible, so I just went around and around. That's why I wanted to get out of Quantico. I wanted space to think. It took me a real long time, but eventually it was the only possibility. It explained everything. The passivity, the obedience, the acquiescence, and why the scenes looked the way they did. Looked like the guy never laid a finger on them, because she never did lay a finger on them. She just re-established the spell and told them what to do, step by step. They did everything themselves, right down to filling their own tubs, swallowing their own tongues. The only thing she did herself was what I did, pull their tongues back up afterward, so the pathologists wouldn't catch on.
But how do you know about the tongues?
He was quiet for a beat. From kissing you, he said.
Kissing me?
He smiled. You've got a great tongue, Harper. It set me thinking. Tongues were the only things which fitted Staveley's autopsy findings. But I figured there was no way to make somebody swallow their own tongue until I realized it was Lamar and she was a hypnotist, and then the whole thing fell together. Harper was silent. And you know what? Reacher said.
What?
The very first night I met her, she wanted to hypnotize me. For deep background, she said. But obviously she was going to tell me to look convincing and get absolutely nowhere. Blake pestered me to do it, and I said no, because she'll make me run naked down Fifth Avenue, like a joke. But it was awful near the truth. Harper shivered.
Where would Lamar have stopped?
Maybe one more, Reacher said. Six would be enough. Six would have done it. Sand on the beach. She stepped over and sat down next to him on the bed, stared down at Skimica, inert beneath the bathrobe.
Will she be okay?
She asked. Probably, Reacher said. She's tough as hell. Harper glanced at him. His shirt and pants were wet and smeared. His arms were green right up to the shoulders.
You're all wet, she said absently.
So are you, he said. Wetter than me. She nodded. Went quiet.
We're both wet, she said. But at least now it's over.
He said nothing.
Here's to success,
she said. She leaned over and threaded her damp arms around his neck, pulled him close and kissed him hard on the mouth. He felt her tongue on his lips. Then it stopped moving. She pulled away.
Feels weird, she said. I won't be able to do this ever again without thinking bad things about tongues.
He said nothing.
Horrible way to die,
she said. He looked at her and smiled. You fall off a horse, you've got to get right back on, he said. He leaned toward her and cupped a hand behind her head and pulled her close, kissed her on the mouth. She was completely still for a beat. Then she got back into it. She held the kiss for a long moment. Then she pulled away, smiling shyly. Go wake her up, Reacher said. Make the arrest. Start the questioning. You've got a big case ahead of you.
She won't talk to me.
He looked down at Skimica's sleeping face. She will, he said. Tell her the first time she clams up, I'll break her arm. The second time, I'll grind the bones together. Harper shivered again and turned away, stood up and stepped out to the bathroom. The bedroom went quiet, no sound anywhere, just Skimica's breathing, steady but noisy like a machine. Then Harper came back in, a long moment later, white in the face.
She won't talk to me,
she said. How do you know? You didn't ask her anything.
Because she's dead.
Silence.
You killed her.
Silence.
When you hit her.
Silence.
You broke her neck.
Then there were loud footsteps in the hallway below them. Then they were on the stairs. Then they were in the corridor outside the bedroom. The cop stepped into the room. He was holding his mug. He had retrieved it from the porch railing. He stared.
"Hell's going on," he said.
7 hours later, it was well past midnight. Reacher was locked up alone in a holding pen inside the FBI's Portland field office. He knew the cop had called his sergeant, and the sergeant had called his bureau contact. He knew Portland called Quantico, and Quantico called the Hoover Building, and the Hoover Building called New York. The cop relayed all that information, breathless with excitement. Then his sergeant arrived in person, and he clammed up. Harper disappeared somewhere, and an ambulance arrived to take Skimica to the hospital. He heard the police department cede jurisdiction to the FBI without any kind of a struggle. Then two Portland agents arrived to make the arrest. They cuffed him and drove him to the city and dumped him in the holding pen and left him there. It was hot in the cell. His clothes dried within an hour, stiff as boards and stained olive with paint. Apart from that, nothing happened. He guessed it was taking time for people to assemble. He wondered if they would come to Portland or if they'd fly him back to Quantico. Nobody told him anything. Nobody came near him. He was left alone. He spent the time worrying about Skimica. He imagined harassed strangers in the emergency room probing and fussing over her. It stayed quiet until after midnight. Then things started happening. He heard sounds in the building, arrivals, urgent conversations. First person he saw was Nelson Blake. "They're coming here," he thought. They must have discussed a position and fired up the Lear. Timing was about right. The inner door opened and Blake walked past the bars and glanced into the cell, something in his face. "You really screwed up now," he was saying. He looked tired and strained, red and pale all at the same time. It went quiet again for an hour. Past 1 o'clock in the morning, Alan Deerfield arrived, all the way from New York. The inner door opened and he walked in, silent and morose, red eyes behind the thick glasses. He paused, glanced through the bars. The same contemplative look he'd used all those nights ago. "So you're the guy, huh?" He walked back out and it went quiet again another hour. Past 2 o'clock, a local agent came in with a bunch of keys. He unlocked the door.
"Time to talk," he said.
He led him out of the cell block into a corridor, down the corridor to a conference room, smaller than the New York facility, but just as cheap. Same lighting, same big table. Deerfield and Blake were sitting together on one side. There was a chair positioned opposite. He walked around and sat down in it. There was silence for a long moment. Nobody spoke, nobody moved. Then Blake sat forward.
"I've got a dead agent," he said, "and I don't like that."
Reacher looked at him.
"You've got 4 dead women," he said. "Could have been 5.
Blake shook his head.
"Never was going to be 5. We had the situation under control. Julia Lamar was right there rescuing the 5th when you killed her."
The room went silent again. Reacher nodded slowly.
"That's your position?" he asked.
Deerfield looked up.
"It's a viable proposition," he said. "Don't you think? She makes some kind of breakthrough in her own time. She overcomes her fear of flying. She gets herself out here right on the heels of the perpetrator. She arrives in the nick of time. She's about to start emergency medical procedures when you burst in and hit her. She's a hero, and you go to trial for the murder of a federal agent."
Silence again.
"Can you make the chronology work?"
Reacher asked. Blake nodded.
"Sure we can. She's at home, say 9 o'clock in the morning, East Coast. She gets herself outside Portland by 5, Pacific. That's 11 hours. Plenty of time to get a brainstorm and get herself to National and get on a plane."
"The cops see the bad guy get in the house?" Deerfield shrugged.
"We figure the cop fell asleep. You know what these country boys are like."
"He saw Padre come calling. He was awake then."
Deerfield shook his head.
"Army will say they never send a Padre. He must have dreamt it."
Did he see her get in the house?
Still asleep.
How did she get in?
Knocked on the door, interrupted the guy. He bolted out past her. She didn't chase him because she wanted to check on Skimica, because she's a humanitarian.
The cops see the guy running out?
Still asleep.
And she took the time to lock the door behind her, even though she was rushing upstairs because she's such a humanitarian?
Evidently.
The room went quiet. Skimica come around yet? Reacher asked. Deerfield nodded.
We called the hospital. She remembers nothing about anything. We assume she must be blanking it out. We'll get a boatload of shrinks to say that's perfectly normal.
Is she okay?
She's fine.
Blake smiled.
But we won't pursue her for a description of her attacker. Our shrinks will say that would be grossly insensitive, given her circumstances.
The room went quiet again. Where's Harper? Reacher said.
On suspension, Blake said.
For not following the party line?
She's unduly affected by a romantic illusion, Blake said. She told us some fantastic bullshit story.
You see your problem, right?
Deerfield said.
You hated Lamar from the start, so you killed her for personal reasons of your own and invented a story to cover yourself. But it's not a very good story, is it? There's no support for it. You can't put Lamar anywhere near any of the scenes.
She never left any evidence, Reacher said. Blake smiled.
Ironic, isn't it? That's exactly what you said to us right at the outset. You said all we had was we thought a person like you did it. Well, now all you got is you think Lamar did it.
Where's her car? Reacher asked. She drove up to Skimica's place from the airport. Where's her car?
The perp stole it, Blake said. He must have snuck around the back on foot originally, not knowing the cop was asleep. She surprised him. He took off in her car.
You going to find a rental in her name? Blake nodded.
Probably. We can usually find what we need to.
What about the flight in from D.C.? You going to find her real name in the airline computer? Blake nodded again.
If we need to.
Is he your problem, right?
Deerfield said again.
It's just not acceptable to have a dead agent without somebody being responsible.
Reacher nodded. And it's not acceptable to admit an agent was a killer.
Don't even think about it, Blake said.
Even though she was a killer?
She wasn't a killer, Deerfield said. She was a loyal agent doing a fine job.
Reacher nodded.
Well, I guess this means I'm not going to get paid, he said.
Deerfield made a face like there was a bad smell in the room.
This is not a joke, Reacher. Let's be real clear about that. You're in big trouble. You can say whatever the hell you want. You can say you had suspicions, but you'll look like an idiot. Nobody will listen to you. And it won't matter anyway, because if you had suspicions, you should have let Harper arrest her, right?
No time. Deerfield shook his head.
Bullshit.
Was she visibly in the act of harming Skimica?
Blake asked. I needed her out of my way.
Our counsel will say even if you had mistaken but sincere prior suspicions, you should have gone straight for Skimica in the tub and let Harper deal with Lamar behind you. It was two against one. It would have saved you time, right? If you were so convinced with your old buddy.
It might have saved me half a second.
Half a second could have been critical, Deerfield said. Life or death medical situation like that, our counsel will make a big point out of it. He'll say spending precious time hitting somebody proves something like personal animosity.
The room went quiet. Reacher looked down at the table.
Law buff like you knows all about it, Blake said. Honest mistakes occur, but even so, actions in defense of a victim need to happen right at the exact time the victim is getting assaulted, not afterward. Afterward is revenge, pure and simple.
Reacher said nothing.
And you can't claim it was mistaken and accidental, Blake said. You once told me you know all about how to break someone's skull, and no way would it happen by accident. That guy in the alley, remember? Petrosian's boy. And what goes for skulls goes for necks, right? So it wasn't an accident. It was deliberate homicide.
There was silence.